From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest Bureau. Thank you very much for tuning in today. We're focusing in our continuing election coverage on the 95th State Assembly District, which faces an election on Tuesday, November 3rd, like every other assembly district. The candidates in this district are the incumbent, Democrat Jill Billings, and her challenger, Republican Jerome Gunderson. And Mr. Gunderson joins me now, and we'll talk to Representative Billings later in the show. Mr. Gunderson, thank you very much for taking time for us today.
Well, it's a pleasure.
Let's get started with just talking about you and who you are and why you're running for this office.
Well, my name is Jerome Gunderson. I've been in La Crosse on and off my entire life. I was born in La Crosse. I'm a fourth-generation resident of the city of La Crosse. My great-grandfather immigrated here at the turn of the century, about the time of the last pandemic in America, and answered the calling to become a physician for the Norwegian immigrants in the region. After visiting Coon Valley, where he was summoned to, he turned around and came right back to La Crosse and said, I'll practice medicine here. I am not a physician. There are many physicians in my family. I'm, like I said, fourth generation. So every Sunday afternoon, the discussion at my grandfather's living room was how to do medicine, how to bring medical care to the people in the community, how do you pay for it, how do you keep health care at a premium, you know, cost relationship to the services rendered. So it's a very near and dear topic to my heart. It's one that I hope to pursue at the state legislature. And I think that what's important to the area is to understand that physician services are supreme. It's not something where the insurance company should dictate and mandate. One size does not fit all. Bureaucrats in Washington or Madison edicts aren't the right way to do medicine. What medicine has to be done is care, and we need to make sure that the patient care is the premium.
So I guess you have tipped your hand in terms of one of the issues that you'd like to address, but I want to ask you about what are a couple of the other issues that you really hope to tackle if you get the opportunity to go to Madison?
Well, I think that it's important to continue the work that's been done by the Department of Natural Resources to keep our natural resources pure and clean. You know, 60 years ago, the river was a mess. Sewage was flowing down the river. There was no management of farm waste. There was no knowledge of what was polluting our rivers and streams. We were killing our eagles. It was very rare back in the mid-70s to see an eagle flying above, and now we have nesting pair above our homes. We see eagles up and down the river very commonly, and that's a true testimonial to what state and federal regulation can accomplish. I think that currently there's a good focus on making sure that our drinking water and our groundwater is safe to drink and that we're not polluting and causing harm to our residents. And I'd like to make sure that we keep a grip on what exactly is causing that without causing undue concern to people and not casting blame where blame is not due. So there's a lot of work that the state has to do, and I've enjoyed that in two terms on the county board. That was a topic of discussion. Nitrates in the soil and in the drinking water is something we really need to pay attention to. And getting your water tested is one of the functions of your county government. I think that that's something I would encourage everyone to do at some point in you know, not just when you buy your house or sell your house, but be aware and use the resources of the government to understand the safety issues.
We were talking a little bit before our official discussion began about your work on the Harbor Commission here in La Crosse, and talk about that affiliation and your interest, as you mentioned, in the environmental aspects of keeping the river healthy, and not only that, but drinking water. What kind of experiences have you had serving in that capacity that might be transferable as a member of the State Assembly for the 95th District?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The river is the spirit of the people in La Crosse. You know, it's a constant flow. It changes. It ebbs and flows. It strengthens in the spring. It weakens in the summer. It's something that runs through the city of La Crosse. My entire district, two sides of it are covered, are surrounded by the river flowing past. And it really is the start of La Crosse. The logging industry created the boom for the city of La Crosse. Now, I think that the biggest impact most people see are the barge traffic, the commercial riverway traffic, and also the recreational aspects. And it's exciting to see the first public dock system put in on the waterfront at the city of La Crosse to be part of that regulation. La Crosse does have the largest no-wake zone on the Mississippi River, extending basically the entire length of the riverfront of downtown La Crosse. And it's exciting. It's interesting. You know, we don't always get it perfect. We can't shut down the river for recreational use. We need to work with the people that are using the river and work with the commercial aspect. I think that there are advances on the horizon with the lock and dam system. Renovation is inevitable. And it'll be exciting to see the changes as they come. And maybe one of these days we will get some of the Norwegian Cruise Line cruise ships coming up and down the river and bring some economic impact into the city of La Crosse.
Speaking of water and its power and its effect, in some of these races that we're covering here on Wisconsin Public Radio, we talk about the major concern of flooding, particularly for Wisconsin's farmers. It's just a huge impact on rural district affecting farmers and others. But even here in town, flooding frequently affects homeowners because we've got people in La Crosse who've even, you know, I've heard from people who say they've had to fill their basements in order to be considered no longer part of the floodplain because having a basement, which didn't 50 years ago, but now in some parts of town, it presents such a risk that it could drive their insurance up exponentially more than they can afford. What can the state do to control flooding here in town, or is that even something that needs to be addressed on that level?
Well, I think that at the city level, there are a lot of things that are taking place. There are remediation activities, raising yards, raising homes themselves, bringing things out of the floodplain, creating levee systems, pumping systems. So there's a lot that is being addressed. You really can't stop Mother Nature. You know, the flooding and the annual flood is something that we all kind of wonder and worry about. And then some years it lasts for a week, and other years it lasts for months. So it's definitely a concern, and we keep an eye on it, and we see what we can do to remediate the effects of it. Keeping homes out of the floodplain is a long-term plan. I live on the river. I'm speaking to you from the Mississippi River right now. I live on my houseboat in La Crosse on the Mississippi River. So I'm intimately aware of the difficulties of what happens on an annual basis with the river. And that's why I enjoy being part of it with the Harbor Commission and look forward to finding solutions for the residents.
We're talking to Jerome Gunderson today, who is the Republican candidate in the race for the 95th State Assembly seat. The election is coming up on Tuesday, November 3rd, and Mr. Gunderson faces the incumbent, Democrat Jill Billings, who we'll hear from later in the show today. Mr. Gunderson, you talked about enjoying the river, and we've spent a lot of time talking about water quality and protecting that river environment. Another major concern that you've outlined is healthcare, and you highlighted your family's long involvement in the area's healthcare system, which is, I think your family name is a household name here in the community. You yourself are not a doctor, but having been exposed to that sort of discussion all of your life, talk about what you think needs to happen in the healthcare system and what your priorities would be there.
Well, I think I mentioned before, I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all solution. I really think that the states know the residents of their individual states better than the federal government. And within each state, each region knows their area best. And that's why I think, you know, what happens in western Wisconsin, in our area, in the Cooley region, is different than what needs to happen in the major urban areas, the Milwaukee or the Green Bay or Madison areas. So I think what's important is that the way the founders of our country set this up is each state was a laboratory of ideas. And I think that rather than a federal one-size-fits-all, we should have federal government block grant to the states to allow state health control of how we distribute and employ our health services. And I think that what we would find as a state level is that we would be much more in tune with the needs of the people in various regions of the state. And I think from that, we could solve our national health care issues by finding out what state's doing it right. And Wisconsin, by and large, leads the way in many, many ways to finding the right way, the right solutions.
So you're speaking against the idea of a nationalized program that is the same in every state. So should I assume that you would be against expanding Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act?
Medicaid will play a part. I'm not in favor of the Affordable Care Act. I think there's middle ground. I think that there has to be a way to find what needs in each communities need to be addressed, that we cannot be forced to cover the needs of the major urban areas when Western Wisconsin and the farming communities and the outlying areas is a very different model. You know, one thing that the Gunderson Health Systems has done early on is satellite clinics and satellite facilities, which has been very, very fruitful for the preventative care. You know, what happens with major national programs, we end up removing the annual checkups and the preventative care. What happens is people only come in once they get sick. We need to address the problems before they arise and see people when they're young and healthy, not only when they're old and frail. It's unfortunate so in today's medical care falls upon emergency rooms where we'd like it to be more dealt with individual physicians. There's ways to do this, and I don't have all the answers, but I do have resources. I have a brother who's the current president of the State Medical Society. Another brother of mine is active in the Dental Association. So there are experts in our immediate area that have answers to these questions. I'm not one of them. I'm a conduit to bring ideas together to find the solutions.
All right, we'll continue our conversation in just a minute, and we will talk about the economy in our area. We'll talk about the government's response to COVID-19 and much, much more. Our conversation with Jerome Gunderson continues in just a moment. Mr. Gunderson faces the incumbent Jill Billings in the race for the 95th State Assembly seat on Tuesday, November the 3rd, and we'll be right back. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. And it's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studios, talking today about the 95th State Assembly District. The election on Tuesday, November 3rd, will determine who fills that seat for the next 2 years. The incumbent is Democrat Jill Billings, and the challenger is Republican Jerome Gunderson, who is joining me today. Mr. Gunderson, we were talking about healthcare quite a lot in the last segment. I want to turn our attention now toward the economy in the local area, because dozens and dozens, maybe hundreds of businesses in the area were shuttered for a time, or at least were offering very reduced services. Many people's employment was affected in response to COVID-19. Some people say necessarily so. Some people question the extent to which some of those businesses were forced to make changes. Where do you stand on the state's response to COVID-19? Maybe not a letter grade, but how would you assess the state's response to COVID-19?
It's a learning process. And I think that we have to admit that there's been several failures in this dealing with the COVID-19. I think first and foremost, I really can't agree that there are essential workers and non-essential workers. To divide the workforce into people who can and people who can't was an error. I think that in an abundance of caution, we shut everything down for what we were told would be a short period of time to so-called flatten the curve. And that was due to the projections of extremely high virulence of this disease, and that the fact that there was an imminent possibility of maybe a million deaths in the state of Wisconsin. Obviously, that hasn't come true. Obviously, it wasn't nearly as critical as what was forecast. But yet, for some reason, we have maintained a very, very strict lockdown, as if this were a pandemic similar to the Spanish flu of the 1900s. I think that what we need to do is to actively look forward to ways to reopen our society. I think that we are dragging our feet, and it's to our detriment, because I think everyone knows that the hurdles are mounting, that the state is falling behind on revenues, and that people are at wit's end. They've spent all their reserves and their savings, and there really is a crisis looming if we can't get people back to work safely. If we lose one-fifth of our restaurateurs or tavern owners, this would be traumatic for not just the people that own the businesses, but for the community, because it has a ripple effect to all the employees that work for these business owners. And this has gone on a little too long.
So you talked about the impact of losing a certain percentage of, just as an example, you talked about restaurateurs and tavern owners. But talk about other issues facing the economy in the La Crosse area that you think need to be addressed on a state level and can be addressed on the state level. What needs to happen to either get our economy going in the right direction or keep aspects of it that are working in the right direction?
Well, I think that state aid is essential. If the state creates the scenario, which our governor has, it's created a scenario where businesses have shut down, people are unemployed, then at the same time, we have to have an increased agency response to be able to fulfill the needs of those filing for unemployment. That hasn't happened. There are people that have filed for state aid that still have not heard or received state aid in the months that this has gone on. Now, remember, this was meant to only be for a couple of weeks or for a short period of time. So I don't understand why the state couldn't keep up with the filings of the state aid. And I think that that's really something that we're going to have to look at to figure out. I think, you know, you asked how to grade the performance and the response of the state of Wisconsin. I think that the bureaucracy tends to move at one speed. And I think that if governmental mandates are put into place, they have to be compensated for in the speed with which they respond to the public. And that hasn't happened in our case. It's really interesting to me that the unintended consequences are often, of what government does, are often much more dangerous than what they were trying to prevent. It's tragic that this disease has affected us, but it's affected the entire country and the world. But the more tragic problem that we're dealing with now is, by locking things down, we have doubled our domestic violence issues. We've doubled our suicide rates. We've doubled our drug abuse. It's the unintended consequences of shutting people down, keeping them in close quarters. And I think we really need to own that as a community, that this is something you have to weigh and measure when you're making governmental decisions. You can't just focus with blinders on one issue, COVID, and ignore the other factors of placing people in, you know, compromised financial situations, in close quarters with each other. It's something that you can't just narrow it down to one item that we focus on. We have to keep a broad mind to all the problems in a community.
Turning the page, we've seen racial justice demonstrations in La Crosse and in many other communities, originating from issues that have come up. The death of George Floyd in Minneapolis, certainly the shooting recently in Kenosha. Those issues and then the protests in La Crosse having been almost completely peaceful, in contrast to some of those in other areas, but in our mostly white community, where diversity isn't always as apparent to the naked eye, what can you do as a state legislator to ensure that minority voices in our community are heard?
I think first and foremost, we need to support our law enforcement. We need a secure society before anyone can feel comfortable. I think that even people in poorer neighborhoods will say decreasing our police presence is not the answer. Now, I know there are people that say the police presence in schools, for instance, with resource officers, is a difficult choice because there's a prejudice there. The problems that occur in school, we try to deal with. We have to come to conclusion that there are problems bigger than what the social structure can handle. We do need law enforcement in our communities. That being said, I just participated with a 5-county discussion. We had sheriffs from all 5 surrounding counties in the La Crosse area. and we had police chiefs and investigators sharing what their response is to this COVID crisis. Obviously, police activity has been way up. There's been a lot of anxiety. And I'm very proud to say that Wisconsin is among the top states in training their law enforcement in methods of de-escalation and how to handle situations. But it's a strain. And I think that there is a missing link in the process. I think that what's important is let police do the job that the police have to do, encourage them to do a good job, and find out if they are doing something wrong, how to correct that.
So as we close, we've got a little bit of time left, and I want to get you to summarize sort of why it is that you think people should consider you. You're facing an incumbent, Democrat Jill Billings, in the November 3rd election. As people look at that ballot, why do you feel like they should choose Jerome Gunderson, the Republican?
Well, I'm a builder. I've been a builder for 35 years. I'm project-oriented. I think that taking that philosophy to Madison to do things on time, to do things on budget, is a new look, a fresh look at how to get things done in Wisconsin government. I think that too often a lot gets talked about and nothing gets done. I like accomplishment. I think that, number one, why can't we maintain what we already possess as a state? You know, we once were known in the state of Wisconsin to have one of the most fabulous road systems in our rural areas all across the country. And now I think it's a joke. I think that we've let go of our responsibilities and opted to spend our resources and funding in other directions. I think that state aid for county road systems needs to be met in its fullest. I think there's problems with how the formulas are created, but I think that we can find solutions. We need to continue to work on our infrastructure, getting back from this this bump in the road of COVID. There will be a lot of spending coming from the federal government, and I think infrastructure improvement is a big part of that. As a builder, I've had the opportunity to do many projects in the region. I've taken a month out of my life every year to work with the Rotary Lights project for 14 years. I was allowed to, and I'm very humbled and proud to be able to help and donate my time to fabricate and construct a lot of the three-dimensional displays during the winter Rotary Lights display. I've gotten to work on some of the community projects like the Granddad Bluff renovation. I got to a chance to work for Fowler and Hammer and do the railing construction corner connections. Most recently, the band shell in Riverside Park. The Rotary Clubs in La Crosse do tremendous work, and their working arm is called Rotary Works. Through Rotary Works, they raised $1 million to build the band shell covering for Riverside Park, and I'm proud to be the main timber frame fabricator and installer of that project. And it's been a blessing. It's been a joy. I'm humbled by the generosity of the city of La Crosse and the surrounding regions, and I look forward to being able to take what I know from real life experience to Madison and make accomplishments and to work for the people of La Crosse, to listen to the people of La Crosse and realize that Madison doesn't have the final word. The people have the final word. I have to be the messenger of that word for the people in La Crosse to the various powers that be in Madison. And that's why you should vote for Jerome. Hey, my opponent's been in there for 5 terms. If you believe in term limits, we have an election. Now's the time to change it up. This is our system, and she needs a challenger, because for so long she has not had a challenger, and that's great for her constituents and her interests. But I have very different interests than my opponent, and I think that infrastructure improvement is high on the list. Let's just pave La Crosse Street. Let's get that done. So vote for Jerome Gunderson, November 3rd. I'd appreciate your vote. Call me anytime. I'll listen to anybody about any subject and have a lively discussion. Thank you.
Jerome Gunderson, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Ezra.
Jerome Gunderson is the Republican candidate in the race for Wisconsin's 95th State Assembly seat. He faces the incumbent, Democrat Jill Billings, on Tuesday, November the 3rd. We will hear from Representative Billings coming up next. If you'd like more information about our program, you can check out our website, which is wpr.org/newsmakers. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our studio in La Crosse. Thank you very much for joining us today as we discuss in our continuing election coverage the 95th State Assembly District. That is the race between the incumbent, Jill Billings, a Democrat, and her Republican challenger, Jerome Gunderson. The election takes place on Tuesday, November the 3rd, so coming right up. And I'm pleased to have Representative Billings joining us right now on Newsmakers. Representative Billings, thank you very much.
Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. So talk a little bit about who you are and why you're seeking another term in office.
I've been in office now for 9 years. Senator Kopenke was recalled and Senator Schilling, who has been Representative Schilling, ran for his race. The seat opened up and I was on the county board and people kind of looked toward me and said, you know, you would be good at this. You should think about this. And I ran and had a really wonderful time visiting people throughout La Crosse and French Island and town of Shelby and was elected. I'm actually not from La Crosse. I am from southeastern Minnesota. I was lucky to grow up in a small town. Both of my grandfathers actually ran for mayor. One of them won and one did not win, but they didn't run against each other, so we still had family harmony. But my grandfather served in World War I, World War II, and the other one built the Alcon Highway, and my dad was in Korea. But I remember sitting at the Easter dinner table and the fire whistle going off and my grandfather getting up from the table and leaving immediately to go respond. He was on our volunteer fire department. My parents, my dad was on our park board for, gosh, I think 20 years. And my parents always coached our baseball team, softball teams, were leaders in our Boy Scout, Girl Scout troops. You know, with seven kids, they really were a big part of the community. I'm the oldest girl in our family of seven. So I think that is part of why I have this feeling of it's important to take care of others and give back to your community. I appreciate that was the upbringing I had, the models I had. And so that's why I'm passionate about children and family issues, I think, in the state assembly, because I want other kids to have what I had. I really appreciate my upbringing. But I went to college. I graduated, first person in my family to graduate from college then, and then came to La Crosse and just fell in love with this area. I thought I'd be here for a few years and go on to Madison or Minnesota, back to Minneapolis, where I went to college. But I just fell in love with La Crosse. My grandfather has a cabin on Lake Pepin, north on the river. He built a cabin there. We spent summers there. Maybe that was part of the draw, the Mississippi, the beautiful bluffs. I think the people here are so great. So I got a job at the Friendship Program at Christ Episcopal Church, and I taught English as a second language to Hmong adults. That was an incredible job, where these people from the other side of the world had values that were so similar to mine. Family, they value family, they value education, elders, and working hard. So I taught English as a second language and citizenship, and I helped write grants for that program. After 10 years, I worked my way out of a job. Most of my students had enough English to go on to Western Technical College, or they got jobs in the community. And so we closed the program after 10 years and gave any leftover grant money out to other programs. And I stayed, the sewing portion stayed open. So I stayed connected to the Hmong community that way. I still wrote grants as a volunteer for that part of the program and wanted to stay in touch with the community. So I sewed with the women one day a week. And I became a stay-at-home mom. That was a very rewarding job where I volunteered a lot in their schools and kind of was a very strong activist in our community. I'm trying to make our community a better place as a volunteer. And then the job, a seat on the county board opened up, and I decided to run for county board. That was a great experience. Our county board staff here has taught me so much that really came in handy as I got my job in the state assembly. I really enjoyed that going door to door, visiting with people, being an advocate, a voice for the people in my district. And so when the state assembly seat opened up, I easily made the decision that I'm going to run. I talked with my kids. Josh and Zoe had two kids that went to Emerson, Lincoln, and then Logan here in La Crosse. They're actually back in La Crosse now, working, which is nice. And then I talked with them about my decision, and they were supportive. And I ran for state assembly and have really enjoyed that job. It seems like a natural fit to my skills. And I really appreciate my district and the people I represent, and I appreciate being able to work for them.
You talk about your family's commitment to public service, sort of inspiring you to run for office the first time on a county level and then eventually into the state assembly. So talk about, as a member of the assembly, what would you like to see addressed? What are the top two or three issues that you want to continue to work on in your next term?
I was chosen by Governor Walker to be on his task force on heroin and opioid drug abuse. And that has been a very rewarding experience for me, working with my colleague John Nygren on the other side of the aisle. We're actually from opposite corners of the state, but he's been down in my district talking about these issues. I've been up in his district in Marinette talking about these issues. And we both have family members, my family, extended family members that suffer from drug abuse. And so it's personal, but it's also wanting to do better in Wisconsin. We passed 34 pieces of legislation in the past several years, and Wisconsin really has done better. Our numbers of overdose were a drug overdose were going down. Now, unfortunately, with COVID-19, those numbers are starting to go up again as people are feeling isolated and depressed and are struggling with connection during COVID. So those numbers, unfortunately, are starting to go back up again. But we worked together traveling all over the state on the governor's task force and listening to people in all corners of the state with the struggles that they were having. And I'm proud of the work that we've done on that task force, but there's more work to be done. So after that task force ended, I've been on the Substance Abuse and Prevention Committee in the Assembly with John and with other members. And that's a committee that has been good at working together. So I'm excited about doing more work in that area. Also, children and family, that's a big area of passion for me. You know, I think if we can just start in the very beginning with programs like home visiting, I encourage the governor to put more money in the budget on home visiting where a woman is pregnant or early family and it appears that they may need some extra help and connection to services. Start very, very early on and work to create healthy families because, you know, you can pay a little bit now or you can pay more down the line if people don't have healthy families and things go off the rails. So I'm the chair of the Child Abuse and Neglect Prevention Board, the Wisconsin State Board. I sit on their exec committee. I'm also the co-chair of our bipartisan, bicameral Children's Caucus, where we've done a lot of education on children's issues in the state assembly. That work has been very rewarding, you know, helping legislators understand about early childhood trauma and how that can stay with people and affect them the rest of their life. Educating legislators on the fact that so much brain development occurs in those first years of life. And we put so much money into education post, but really those first 3 to 5 years, there's so much brain development going on. What we're learning now about children in their early years is so important, and it's so important that we address that issue.
We're talking to Representative Jill Billings, who serves in the State Assembly in the 95th District here in Wisconsin. She's up for re-election on Tuesday, November the 3rd, and her opponent in that race is Republican Jerome Gunderson. And we'll hear more of our conversation with Jill Billings after a quick timeout. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you're interested in learning more about our program, maybe you want to stream a previous episode on demand. You can do that on our website, which is WPR.org/newsmakers. If you want to take the show on the go, it's easy as well. Open your favorite podcast app and search for Newsmakers and hit subscribe and you'll never miss an episode. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest studio based here in La Crosse. Thank you very much for listening. And we're in the middle of our conversation with Jill Billings, who's the incumbent and the Democrat running in the race for Wisconsin's 95th State Assembly District. She faces Jerome Gunderson on Tuesday, November the 3rd. Representative Billings, we heard about your family's long history of public service, inspiring you to become a political leader. And we heard about your concerns about the opioid epidemic and your efforts on behalf of children and families. I'd like to ask you a couple of questions about some other issues that are affecting your district. Let's start with the economy. COVID-19 has thrown a lot of people for quite a loop, and some members of our economy, particularly farmers in this area, have had challenges well before that even. So who is it that's being left behind in our economy, and what can the state legislature do on their behalf?
Well, in my district, I think there are some people who have been able to work from home, and so they've weathered COVID-19 in a more successful way than some people that I visit with who work, especially in restaurants or in. I'm the ranking member on tourism, so I'm really tight in touch with what's happening in the tourism area. So whether it's hotels or venues or restaurants. La Crosse is a big tourism destination, and we've been very successful with that. Last year was one of our best years ever, so we're doing great work there. But when COVID hit, then things shut down. The positive thing that La Crosse has is that with COVID, we know that outside is better than inside, and we have so many opportunities in outside areas. So I know that our Explore La Crosse, our Convention and Visitors Bureau, is really working hard to stress that and continue bringing visitors here to La Crosse. I also sit on the Mississippi River Parkway Commission that promotes the Great River Road. And so I know that we're doing work there to keep tourism going, keep people interested in visiting in a safe way in La Crosse. And I talked to businesses early on, my small businesses, about how to open safely. Because if customers don't feel safe, they're not going to come. And a lot of businesses have done a good job with that. Now, is it sustainable to have 6 feet between tables and outside seating? And no, it's not. But as if we can keep going and have enough business generated to make it through COVID, make it through the other side, really that's what I'm concerned about. And I'm happy that I think the governor has done a good job of bringing grants and help to small businesses. I know Mayor Cabot has done stuff on the local level. I'm looking for a second package from the federal government. We really need a second package. We need to keep our economy going. We need to keep these small businesses going. We need people working. And I hear from people, whether it's small business owners or people who are trying to get unemployment claims through. And my office has been working hard with people who have called to see if we can get help for them with some of those cases that are more difficult, where they're having harder time contacting previous employers or they're in adjudication. So we're working with people in our community to really promote that. In my small way, I have a Facebook page every Saturday. It's Small Business Saturday I've started, where I visit a business. I talk about, I'm reminding people that these small businesses are still open and they're functioning in a safe way. And you can still go to Kroner Hardware and get a furnace filter. You can still go to the sweet shop and get some chocolates. You can still go to Meringue Bakery. You can still go to so many of our businesses. Rudy's Drive-In was built for social distancing. I mean, you don't have to get out of your car if you don't want to. And that's how they've been historically. So that's a small personal way that I'm also talking to businesses, visiting businesses, and then promoting them personally. But also in conversations as a legislator and working as a legislator.
We've seen racial justice demonstrations not only in La Crosse, but across the state and across the country, related to and really sparked by events so close to home, even here in Wisconsin and neighboring in Minnesota. not to mention things going on in Kentucky and elsewhere. What would you do as a representative in your next term to make sure that minority voices, who often feel so invisible in our society, have a seat at the table when it comes to discussions about policies that affect them?
Yeah. First of all, I have to say I support the protests that we've had in La Crosse. I support the free speech and the right for peaceful assembly, and things have gone in a more positive way in La Crosse. I think in part because of people involved in protests and just having a message, getting message out, but also not letting it get destructive. And sometimes that's beyond the control of the protesters, as we've seen in other cities. But I'm happy and grateful for what's happened here. I think part of it is also credit goes to our law enforcement. Our law enforcement, I believe, is ahead of law enforcement in much of Wisconsin and in the United States, where their policing procedures are better. They've had more experience maybe with crowd control because of Oktoberfest and events like that in our community. So they practice de-escalation. They practice how to work with crowds like that and not be as confronting, but work with the crowds. So I give our law enforcement credit for some of that. When Governor Evers called us into session and I stood with my Black caucus and other members outside the Capitol asking to look at legislation that we had proposed earlier in the spring before all of this started, just legislation surrounding policing, things like banning chokeholds and working on de-escalation training. You know, I talked to Chief Kudron about this, who I think he's doing a great job as chief. I talked to him about these issues, and, you know, most of it we're already doing in La Crosse Plus. So we don't do our law enforcement doesn't practice chokeholds. Our law enforcement does more de-escalation training than was requested in the bill. We have crisis intervention teams that go out with our law enforcement and help with people who have mental health issues on calls. We have our embedded law enforcement officers that I've visited several times around our community who are doing such good work within the neighborhoods, talking with people, working with social workers. And I think we're doing better work here in La Crosse. And I think we're a good model for other communities. I want to say that first off. So second, how would I bring more people of color in? Well, I think that you have to start early. I think you have to start with good education. You know, when so many of our public schools depend on property tax, you know, some neighborhoods, some cities don't have the same property tax as others. So some public schools have a hard time, you know, doing what other schools can do in wealthy school districts. So I think we have to make sure that we have quality public schools for all children at an early age. And I would even start earlier with early childhood education, really working to have quality access to early childhood education for all children.
So those are good long-term issues that might create more equity among minority populations. But what about giving a voice to people who are interested in being heard now?
We can do systemic things with employment, more job training and apprenticeships. I think that we can look at our policing and make sure that other areas are doing what we're doing here. To get more voices at the table, I think we have to be welcoming and we have to invite. We have to work hard to invite and invite again and invite again. The Franciscan Sisters, I think, are doing a great job with this. I've been in on some of their listening sessions that they've had community conversations, and I've been part of that, just listening to people of color. I know there are some people who don't believe that systemic racism exists. But yeah, well, if I'm a white person, my experience is different than a person of color. So maybe I don't see that. I haven't experienced it. So the important thing is to reach out and educate yourself. Listen to what people of color are saying. And I think there are some really good initiatives in our community where people are having conversations and doing that, bringing people to the table. In my job, I'm encouraging people of color to run for office. I encouraged a woman to run in the district north of here who's a Native American. We've never had a Native American elected official. I encouraged her to run. I'm always trying to build our team with people who don't normally have a voice.
A lot of the Democrats that I'm talking to, whether they currently hold office or whether they're trying to gain office, look at the issue of health care, which is what I'd like to discuss next, and say that Wisconsin needs to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. And a lot of the Republicans that I've been speaking to say that while health care is an important issue, the key to addressing the health care coverage disparity does not lie within Medicaid expansion. Where do you stand on Medicaid expansion?
Well, to me, this is an easy call. I don't think that this is hard to figure out. These are our federal tax dollars. The federal government collects our tax dollars from Wisconsin, and then they come back to us through these federal expansion dollars that pay for our health care here. There are states that have Republican governors, that have Republican legislators who have said, yes, we want to take our federal tax dollars back and accept those tax dollars here.
We've got a couple minutes remaining, and I want to give you an opportunity, sort of in your own words and using whatever priorities that you'd like to express, to talk to people about why they might like to vote for Jill Billings in the upcoming race against Jerome Gunderson in the 95th State Assembly District.
Well, every 2 years, people of my district get to make a decision whether they want me. And I get to make a decision whether I want to do this job again. I had a really good run these last few terms in office where I've connected well with people on the other side of the aisle. We've worked together well on getting legislation passed. That's something I learned on the county board. That's someone I hear from people as I'm knocking on doors. Get something done for us. Don't just fight. And so that's what I've done, and it's worked well. I think the proof is seen in the legislation I've passed, whether it's my Opportunity Zone bill that the governor signed in Madison, HOPE legislation that the governor signed here. I've been acknowledged by groups as diverse as the Wisconsin Economic Development Association for my, as a champion of economic development. The Wisconsin Counties Association named me their outstanding legislator. Citizens of Scenic Wisconsin, conservation voters have named me their champion. The public health people have named me public friend of public health, and even family medicine has given me their friend of a family medicine award for my work on vaping and our anti-vape bills and my work on the heroin and opioid crisis and meth crisis that we have. So I am a very hard worker. I have more committees and boards than most legislators, I'll say, but I love the work. I love learning about issues and how I can make things better for the people that I represent. And I hope people feel the same way and see that I'm listening to them and I'm working with other people in Madison to address their needs.
Representative Jill Billings is the incumbent. She's a Democrat, and she faces Jerome Gunderson, who's a Republican, in the Tuesday, November 3rd election for the 95th district seat in the Wisconsin State Assembly. Representative Billings, thank you very much for joining us on Newsmakers.
Thank you very much.
And this is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to check out the rest of our political coverage, perhaps you want to stream on demand this episode or a previous episode or conversation, you can find all of those at our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. You can find our show as a podcast. Open your favorite podcast platform, search for Newsmakers, and hit subscribe. Of course, you can listen to Newsmakers every Friday on the Ideas Network at 10 a.m. on 90.3 in La Crosse, and Friday at 7 p.m., another opportunity to hear Newsmakers on WLSU 88.9 FM. Saturday morning, if you're an early riser, 5 a.m. is when you can hear Newsmakers on WLSU 88.9. So until next time, thanks very much to Dawn Jewell and John Davis, who helped produce the program. I'm Ezra Wall. Join us again next time for another Newsmakers right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.